The seventh creation and the number seven. We know that in Vedic lore, the number seven has a very special place. And how does the number 100 come from the Vedic perspective? We have the seven planes of consciousness, Sat, Chit, Anand, Mahalok, and Man, Prana, and physical, that's Sharir or matter. Each of these planes contain all the others. So it becomes 7 times 7. So it becomes 49. And then if you take it that there is the descent of consciousness from the origin right down into the material and state and below, then it becomes 49 and the ascent, the returning ladder. Then it becomes twice the number 49, 98. And then you have one which is the origin and the other side where it has lapsed into inconscience. So you have 100. So that's the origin of number 100. But that's a different story altogether. We have Saptasindhus, Saptrivers, the seven rivers which flow. All beautiful internal symbols of an inner journey. The Vedic Rishis, we know, they clothed. They saw a deeper significance in everything and they clothed our inner journey in symbolic outer language. Those who were not adhikaris, they caught the outer. And those who were ready for a deeper understanding, they were initiated into the inner mystery. That's how it has been all over. We know about the Vedic age, there have been similar, something corresponding in other places. But with that we come to this seventh creation, and it starts. How did it start, this seventh creation? What it means is, there have been six pralayas, dissolutions, before this seventh creation has come into existence. Evidence, we have very indirectly, at least science does speak about five or possibly six ice ages, which may or may not correspond to that, but more or less it does speak about. There is recounting of the great flood in which masses of humanity were destroyed in not only Indian thought but in Western thought, in the Ark of Noah, the stories of Gilgamesh and many others which point towards a great flood which had probably wiped off the previous civilization. Not all was wiped out though, because something remained, and that's why when a new civilization starts, it picks up very rapidly the threads that have been lost in the journey. Because the deep essence of things is never lost whenever there is a destruction. And I take this simple example that when you are trying to build something and it gets broken or destroyed, whether it be a relationship or it be a, it be a world. So is everything lost? No. Wisdom is never lost, it is gained. Strength is never lost, it is gained. So you come back to life with a greater wisdom and a greater strength. So that's the whole journey about. Forms get dismantled, but then there is a learning which has gone through that process and it comes back in a new creation. That's the whole process. So this seventh creation, according to Indian thought account, starts in a very interesting way. So there is this king whose name is Satyavrat. Meaning thereby, he is the one who has taken a vow of truth. So that itself starts from there. But in his kingdom there are all kinds of people. And one day, as he goes to the river to take a bath, he sees a little fish and the fish tells him, "King, king, please take me to the palace." And he takes the fish to the palace and puts it in a nice bowl. And then as he turns back, again the fish tells him that, No, I need a bigger bowl because I am growing. So it puts him in a nice little place, much bigger with water. And as he turns, it calls him again, "I have grown bigger." And so he puts in a pond and then the river and finally back to the sea. Sounds very strange. What kind of a story is this? Anyways, we'll come to that. But the story continues and then the fish tells him that, "Look here, after..." Fish is none other but Lord Vishnu has come as a fish, in the form of a fish, Matsya Avatar. And the fish tells him that, look, after 7 days, there is going to be severe downpour and everything will be drowned in that. So, however, I am bidding you to make a ark, a boat, and put all the specimen in the boat, all the different animals, plants, saptarishis, the seven sages, sage-like people, and then you steer. So who will steer? The fish says, I'll come. You tie the rope to my horn and I'll steer you through. And he starts making a boat. As he is beginning to make a boat, people call him mad. They even start, stoning him. What kind of a logic is this? Seventh day everything will be destroyed. How can it be? Okay, we have had downpours, but things will be destroyed. And you have to build a boat, you must be hallucinating, consult a psychiatrist. But he makes the boat, nevertheless, he has that faith in his heart that, well, I had a revelation from Lord Vishnu and that's how it is. And then the downpour begins, he takes, now again there are people who say, okay, downpour, it's chance, maybe. But it is going to destroy civilization, that's a bit too much. But anyways, the announcement has gone and people come and get into the boat. Many look at him and laugh at him that they are going to drown in the ocean. Fools. So, and nevertheless, with these few people, he goes. And the fish appears, they tie to the fish. The fish has a battle to make. And on the way, it meets an asura known as Hayagriva. And what is that asura done? He has drown the Vedas in the ocean. So, the fish rescues the Veda, destroying this asura. And then, they don't know where they are going. So, there are the saptarishis who guide. At the same time, Vishnu appears in everybody's heart and begins to guide them. And finally, they reach the shores of the Ganges. And then a new civilization has to start. Now this story, of course, like most Indian stories, conceals a lot of deep truth. It's about the end of a civilization. A very straight meaning is, when the consciousness really has started bursting beyond its limits and it wants to grow. So the fish is growing rapidly. There is a very rapid pace of growth which marks the end of a civilization and beginning of another. We see this happening today, don't we? Even children tell us, we want more space. They may or may not understand what it means, but they want more space. Wives, they want more space. They're not happy being inside the kitchen. Husbands have no choice but to get some space. They also want more space. And everybody wants more space. So this is happening all over the world. Because their consciousness is growing and expanding. And everything that is available becomes small. Earth becomes small. So we venture into space, we venture into moon, we venture into Mars, we are venturing into the sun, we are venturing into the galaxies. But inwardly also, the paradigm in which we lived that has crashed. 60s. We have flower children, we have the revolt which Beatles and many others, they express the anguish. And at the same time, we don't know what is new, but everybody is seeking for something, some way of life, which is other than the world that religion and science had built by the power of the mind. Mind had built on one side a world of religion to control our outer life, ethics, morality based on religious doctrines, and science for outer life to make a life comfortable, everything. And now that has begun to collapse. People are able to see through it both. And that's the collapse which we are witnessing. And that collapse is there in the story. Who will get into the boat? Now we remember, Mother speaks about the great flood. Many of us may not be conversant, but time is very less, so I won't get into it. There's a whole great description of the great flood, which she is actually witnessing in her inner experience. And she speaks about the supramental ship. This ship has been built. It's an inner ship. And she says that these were people who were being taken from this side to the other. that other side is not nirvana or some other plane of consciousness beyond, but there is a shift within man to a higher plane of consciousness. Who is ready? Who is not ready? So as she is taking, people are going in the ship, she sees there are beings who are trying to see who is ready and who is not ready. And she describes that there were few people, some from ashram, some outside, some different places. And then she laughs almost uncontrollably. She says, what I saw made me laugh. What did she see? The disciple asks. She says, many of the values that we hold very sacred, especially in today's times, have no value from the supramental standpoint. I don't know whether I should mention or not, because it can be quite a shocker. Say it. Okay. Mother didn't say it first time. Then after some time, disciple said, mother, what did you see? She didn't say. Somebody documented. She says, for example, all these ideas of ascetic purity. I have got up at 4 o'clock, taken a bath, and therefore now I am reciting a mantra and therefore I am special. Second, she said, things like, hold your breath, the sanctity of marriage. Now this is a shocker, I'm sure. But anyways, it's gone. Why? Not because marriage cannot be special. It can be. But it has turned into an institution of falsehood. Your heart is elsewhere. Your body is elsewhere. Because you are bound by a legal bond. You see, in India it was an inner thing. Since we have talked about marriage fire, the secret fire. But now it's a legal contract. This is the kind of degeneration that has taken place. People don't separate. Why? Because it's a legal contract. It involves problems. So they continue to live a life of untruth, unrhythm. I won't use the word falsehood. Deviating from the deep inner truth. And that's happening in every sphere of life. Deviating from the own inner truth. So what happens now when they step up into the boat? Vishnu appears in the heart. As the one who gives the yoga within the heart. And from the heart they begin to discover which way we are going, where are we going. The deeper heart, of course. There is a superficial heart which is subject to turmoils and turbulences. Very interesting. And then the Vedas have to be recovered. What is Veda? So Veda is not a book, or it's not a book only, lest I heard some sentiments. Veda is a book. But what is that book about? It's about the secret knowledge which is embedded in creation. Veda is everywhere. Veda is written in mud and stone and stars and flowers and moon and sun and earth and beast and bird and man. Veda is everywhere. It is a secret knowledge. Veda, the end of that knowledge is in everything. That's how things are ordered. That's the supermind actually. The secret knowledge and consciousness which is embedded. That's why everything keeps to an ordered rhythm. That's why the seed grows into a tree which is predetermined. It's not a random accident. Random accidents would lead to suddenly a mango tree, out of that a rose coming up. We don't see that. Just imagine genes are following in ordered steps. That's why there is a rhythm. And this rhythm continues till the time is there for a new rhythm. So the story of this seventh creation, so Vedas have to be recovered. They have, you know, he recovers the Vedas and gives it. This story is very interestingly, Sri Aurobindo hints at in his poem, The Rishi. Those who love poetry and who would love to see what is the knowledge that came at the beginning of this seventh cycle, may go back and read this poem, The Rishi. It's about the earth is destroyed. There is an ice age. And probably that cycle was being played out in Arctic zone. And it connects very well with all the migration and etc. But I'll not go into that. So their king, Manu. Manu is, in Indian conception, each age or the four yugas are governed by the son of Surya. Surya is the creator. He appoints a Manu. Manu is the thinker. And he directs the minds of humanity to move in a certain way. So Manu goes and asks the Rishi, what do I do? There is nothing, no one. So the Rishi gives him that secret knowledge. How he should, what he has to do. And with that knowledge, Manu goes on and establishes the kingdom. King Satyavrat of that age, he is given a boon. And the boon is that in the next cycle, you will become the next Manu. He is a human, but he becomes the king of mankind to govern and direct mankind. And the name of this Manu, of the seventh creation, is Shraddhadev. Now the story is complete. Who gets into the boat of the new creation? Now I am transposing it into this. This is the seventh creation entering into its phases. What normally would bring pralaya. But why does pralaya happen at all? Let's touch upon that very briefly. So we know there are four cycles. Satyug, Treta, Dwapar, Kaliyug. So in the age of truth, the divine appears, or Lord Vishnu, Vishnu is a preserver, but divine appears in the heart of human beings. So that's why it is the age when every human being is impelled by the truth within his heart. That's why it is Satyug. Because everybody knows the truth and is impelled by truth. So nothing is needed formally. After the destruction, he has appeared and a new civilization starts where truth is held inside the heart. But over a period of time, it's very difficult to hold truth for a long time. And it's not enough that one holds it in the heart. Every layer must be touched. So we have Treta. There is it one step below. So the age of silver. So what happens in the silver age? So after the gold age. So there we have the truth is embodied by the Raja, Chakravarti Raja. So we have Raja Ramachandra. If the king is holding the truth, it will affect the kingdom. So that's why it is called in Ramayana. Why the kingdom was so beautiful? Because one person, one man's perfection still can save the world. One person, the king, Chakravarti Raja, Daihik Daivik Bhautik Tapa, Ram Raj Kahuni Vyapa. There were no ills. Simply because he held the truth in his heart. He acted according to that, not by any moral, social standard, but by the truth that he saw. And that's a whole story. Because Ramayana is the story of transition from the animal to the human, humanized humanity. Animal type humanity to a humanized. Then after that goes one step down. Dwapar, the Bronze Age. So there from the mind, the Raja, who is the king, it enters into the vital of man. And it's the age when the truth has to be worked out in the vital. And we know how the vital is. Therefore, it needs codification. So Vishnu comes now as the great codifier. To have rules, regulations, laws, etc. Humanity uses precisely those rules, regulations to do everything possible toward the end of Dwapar. And at the end of Dwapar, Sri Krishna gives the Gita. Dwapar ends. And we enter the age of Kali, that is Iron Age. Now, what is the characteristic of Iron Age? There is no rule, no regulation. The king is useless. I mean, nobody is holding truth. Why this is allowed? It is allowed because a new creation may develop. Now, in Kali Yuga, it touches rock bottom in matter. So, on one side, we discover wonderful things at a material level. But on the other side, human consciousness is so much covered by matter and materialistic vision, scientific materialism, positivism, everything possible under the sun. Everything has to be seen through the lens of matter. So that's Kali Yuga, and when it becomes extreme, then that has to be destroyed. But this time, the mother assures us, it will not be destroyed so completely devastatingly as in previous cycles. Things will go away. There is no doubt. When she assures us, she doesn't say that everybody will be saved and we can have Bonhomi party and chalo, let's go together in the boat. No. She says that. She says, who will be the ones who is ready for this new creation? Who will collapse? In the story itself of King Satyavrata, his first hint is those who have faith. is there in our scriptures also, everywhere. They will make a leap of faith. When King Satravat tells them that, look, oh, this creation will be destroyed, this new, who will come? They say, you are a fool. So there are people who will say to all of us, you are a fool. Kya ho raha Auroville mein? Auroville, this place, that place. Small number of humanity. Yes, only a few can come in the boat. Though this is now a ship. Mother has arranged a ship, big ship. And there will be some time, she says that who will be saved? Those who have found that with all that humanity can give us, we can imagine all that it can give, not only now, in the future, they would still feel its limitations. They would feel the limitations of science as well as religion. The limitations of all that we can be provided. It's not a question of whether we are actually provided or not. Human mind can conceive. And they feel within them an urge for something new, something different. Not a fashionable new, but a new way of life, something new. And that's why we see this urge has been caught by a number of people, and they are just exploring and experimenting. They are exploring and experimenting because they are unhappy with the old world order. But they don't understand the new world order. And therefore there comes the importance of teachers like all here, and you know, this is not a Kumbh Mela, it is a Kumbh, very beautiful, but it is a Yajna where people come, explore. Otherwise, see, today old world is going away, it's gone, the values are gone, because like divine does it, he removes it. So what has happened with the children? They don't know which way to turn. The old authority of the old world, based on ego, I am your dad, therefore you must listen to me. The child says, I don't care. So we say Kali Yuga has come, but no, it is the first step towards Satyuga. Dad can get respect provided he is authentic. This is the word. Provided he is not a hypocrite. It applies to moms also, but moms are generally authentic. I have seen women somehow are a lot more genuine because they are more heart-centered. But men are more, the crookedness comes. Maybe, I don't know, that's my understanding. Maybe I know more men. Mind-centered. So they devise crooked ways to do things. So children don't care. So the old world is breaking. But so we call it night. Why? Because all the values are gone. At least in India we know, like I have been brought up in a very traditional family where the first thing we were taught on getting up is touch the mother earth. And then when food was made first, I used to go give food to the cow, to the crow, to the dog, to God, and then eat. Touch the feet of the parent before going out. I used to say, I am going, so take blessings. I used to take blessings. All that is gone. Why? Because something new is coming, which is much more beautiful, much more truer than what we can imagine. Because all these institutions had become subject to falsehood. And that's how I experienced it. I experienced it when, you know, in our society, the Brahmin, the learned, they had to be, they were very special people. And I saw through it and I said, I'm not going to touch the feet of this scoundrel. So parents were very unhappy. So the real knowledge was lost. It became scriptural knowledge. So if you ask questions which are uncomfortable, they were very angry. How dare you ask? I'm an authority on this or that. It's gone. So the old world was based on the mind and the ego. And it has taken us as far as it could take. From that first age right down to, and now a new age is dawning upon mankind. Who is ready? Those who are no more satisfied with all that the old world can give. And we can imagine everything under the sun, from the wheelbarrow to the artificial intelligence. And therefore they are seeking for something new. They see it through it. And this seeking for something new opens the door. When mother was asked, what should we do to qualify for this new world. We have so many methods of yoga. See, in the age of codification, Dwapar, we had so many methods. Even yoga was codified. The 8 limbs of this yoga and 10 limbs. Just imagine something so beautiful as moving to the divine is codified. You have to sit like this. You have to be bolt straight. As if divine cares. So you see, everything was codified. Strictly every system of yoga mapped out, macadamized, beaten out and fixed in a book which you have to read and somebody has to teach you exactly the way it is done. All that is broken. Why? Because yoga also had entered into shackles. Now it is liberated. So look at it how Mother says, what is this new yoga? Who is ready for the new world? She said, 2 things are needed. Only 2 things. Of course, I am not talking of the ultimate 2 things, call and the grace, which Shobhinda speaks about. But Mother says, because not all are so fortunate to have the call for the new creation, for the divine, and have the grace. They are a different category. They have the red carpet VIP thing. So, but in general, not all are fortunate to, you know, even conceive of divine or believe in the divine. She said 2 things are needed. 1, she says, do not cling. And then she explains. He says, even people who say they do not cling, still cling. Old ideas, habits, patterns, everything we cling. And now, those things are being broken down. No section of humanity is living isolated from the rest. They are being broken down. When people used to travel from India abroad, so they were told, everything you can do, study, everything. Don't come with a gora mem. Don't marry and come. That. Now these things are there. So there are no fixed patterns. All the 4 types, the Chaturvarna Vyavastha, which had its own meaning, but I am not going into it, is broken now. The divine had put it and he broke the mold. Why? Because now all 4 have to come in each individual. Each has to be an illumined disciple of truth. Each has to be, as Shobhinda describes it, a prophet, a lover, a king, a warrior of the soul. Each one has to be also a lover who gives in plenty to this creation. And each has to be a Shudra carrying the spirit of service. So all the old patterns have been, these patterns were like in some sections of humanity certain kind of work was being done. It had its meaning and purpose without a doubt. But it has been broken. You can't revive it. Because all have to now come in. Each one of us who is moving toward the new creation. So if we cling to the old idea, I am a Brahmin. Your child will say, I don't care, Dad. I am not going to have your surname. I actually asked my son, do you want this surname? He said, no way. I said, thank God. So he doesn't have a surname. But you need to have 2 names. I said, Arya is okay? He said, yeah. Arya is something very special, no? Arya, the true manhood of man. And Yuyutsu. So he became Arya Yuyutsu. There is no Pandey. So I was very happy that, you know, this is new creation, new age. You don't want, of course you need 2 names, but it need not be surname. This is something new. People are trying to, you know, they are even naming themselves as they grow up. These are steps. So do not cling to the past, to the old ways. Democracy is an old way, for God's sake. Another shocker. It won't work. Mother says, it's Shobhinda gives her one of the ball. It's in her inner vision in 60s. And he gives her a ball and says, it is worn out. Can you change it? And she says, I knew it is democracy. It has outlived its purpose. It won't work. It is something else. But that's a different discussion. We'll not go into that. But all the old methods of organizing the world and life are gone. How much ever we may want, it won't come back. And if we try to do it, we'll make a mess of things. Like the story of Daksha and Sati. So, we know that Daksha is a Prajapati. He is one of those beings of the mental world who are given to organize the world, Prajapati. So he's a subtle world being. So he creates order in this world. So his daughter Sati loves Shiva. Now he loves Sati, but Shiva has no order. He is free. He doesn't own even a car. And yet they call him as the, you know, so powerful. He said, what kind of, in my order, the greatest of great must have a Mercedes. They must have a tuxedo. Shiva is moving around with, you know, Mrikshala. What kind of a, how can you say that he is? So she falls in love. So they get married. And then he holds a yagya. Yagya was a means to govern. Yagya literally meant everybody comes and gives their best. And then it goes to all. This is a yagya in that sense. So everybody comes and gives their bit and then it goes to all. In the fire of aspiration for a beautiful new creation. Outer details notwithstanding. So he invites Sati because he loves her. But he doesn't invite Shiva. Why? Because he is scared of Shiva. Shiva will come, he will spoil everybody. They will see Shiva and get all the wrong ideas. Shiva come, Shiva doesn't come. He tells Sati, cautions her, look here, this sounds fishy. So he goes. And when she goes and she sees his father, her father is insulting Shiva, she can't stand it and she plunges into the fire and she dies. And when she dies, Shiva's enrage, wrath, and one lock of his hair, Virbhadra, he comes and destroys the entire army of Prajapati, and Prajapati's head is removed. Then everybody requests, so they fix a goat's head. Shobindu recounts this story in Bande Mataram. So what happens with the goat's head? In a big hurry, surgeons are all in a hurry. Oh my God, what's happened? What happened? So Shiva says, okay, put any animal's head, I'll revive him. That head is gone. That ego has to go. So they put a goat's head, but in a hurry, the divine surgeons, gods, okay, not divine surgeons, they fix it the other way around. So when Prajapati moves forward, he thinks he's moving backward. And actually, when he seems to go backward, he's actually moving forward. Paradox. And what about Sati? She comes back. Shiva for a long time carries a body filled with grief till Vishnu cuts the body into pieces and they become the Shakti Peet. And then Sati is reborn as Parvati, daughter of the mountains. Navdurga, so I won't. Navdurga is that special. She's born as the energy in matter, divine energy in matter, Shailbala, going through all the stages, Brahmacharini, Chandraghanta, to Siddhidhatri. That's, I think someone else will take that. So again we see the same thing in the story. You can't revive the form in which the old creation was there. If you try to do it by the form, it won't work out. What you have to revive is the spirit. That's how Sri Aurobindo says. Recover the Aryan spirit, not just in thought, but in life. And he says that we have to break the molds of the past, but we have to safeguard the spirit. If the spirit goes, nothing remains. Break the molds of the past, but the spirit is the springboard towards new molds of the future, which are going to emerge. And who will be ready for that? One is, he says, do not cling because they are gone. Don't try to revive the past forms. Spirit is fine. Past form is that, okay, Veda, this particular mantra to be chanted this way, it has its meaning, okay, fine. But live the Veda inside the heart. Look at creation and discover the divine in every element. That's what Veda is about. From where will flow natural ways of life, love things, because there is the divine element in them. Not because your ego is associated with them. Awaken this inner fire of aspiration and cast everything into it that must go. Break this head full of ego. If you don't do it yourself, somebody will do it. Probably your child, whom you just can't fight. So, do not cling. Second thing she says, thirst for progress. Mankind may not understand divine, maybe a big word. But progress, everybody understands. Progress, we can progress along the same old lines. I have more money, I have car, I have this, or progress vertically. Whatever I have acquired so far in terms of knowledge, in terms of capacities of the heart, head, life, body, can I improve upon it? These capacities, that's one kind of progress. Can I break from the limitations of the human consciousness into uncharted boundaries or beyond boundaries? That is another kind of progress. So progress, thirst for progress. And then she says, if you have these two, then the extravagances of an American youth are a path. You heard of those people, bikers, wandering here, there. What kind of people? They're looking for something they don't know. That is a path. Why? Because if you have the fire for progress, we see that in Auroville, unending progress, one of the things. Unending progress, not to be satisfied with anything that I've done it. First of all, nobody does it. The doer is one, but that's yoga. I will not touch upon that. So thirst for progress, that's what is required. So the old civilization is dying and a new is being born. Where is it dying? We can see it all over on the outside. Where is the new civilization emerging? Look into the hearts of human beings. Into the children. Into their eyes. Until we still spoil them with the poison and the milk of old world. If you don't do it, very naturally, very spontaneously, the world is unfit now for these new children. I see them all over, and every time my heart feels such beautiful new creation is emerging, and our schools, our teaching system has become so redundant. No wonder she gave name to the school, last school, then future school, then foundation school, no school finally. What she meant is not school in the traditional way. All that schooling through a typical blackboard, through, it's something new which is coming. Let them learn in a very natural way with the environment, with life, and let it be connected with life organically. Let them come and ask questions. Like in Gurukul, there should be people who can direct them. Based on their degree of quest, they will receive the knowledge. Not as a, stuffing them with information. So I suppose this is the background. Just I'll take another 5-7 minutes. Something from the mother. This is in, I think, 1918 probably. She's in Japan. She's addressing the women of Japan more than 100 years before. What is she seeing? This before the First World War and Second World War started, which actually collapsed. The entire old world order collapsed with that. That's why we see that there was a sudden loss of values. People didn't know where to go because they had lived on religion, science and industry, which is going to save us, 1900. And everything led to such a gory destruction. So she is addressing them. Then she says something very beautiful. We are living in an exceptional time at an exceptional turning point of the world's history. Never before, perhaps, did mankind pass through such a dark period of hatred, bloodshed and confusion. She was obviously foreseeing, because 14 had started, but what was going to come was much, much, much worse. But what is she bringing during that time? And at the same time, never had such a strong, such an ardent hope awakened in the hearts of the people. Indeed, if we listen to our heart's voice, we immediately perceive that we are, more or less, consciously waiting for a new reign of justice, of beauty, of harmonious goodwill and fraternity. Justice reminds me just having a small conversation. I said, age of truth, before it comes, there will be an age of justice. You will have to do course correction in many things. Can't help it. Several, humanity has suffered. It's not about you and me having suffered. But humanity has suffered several kinds of anguish. injustice to groups of people, injustice towards women, injustice towards various sections, the fallen section, the downtrodden. All this has to be counterbalanced. That's how Vishnu comes, balancing. So it will take various forms. Forms of ignorance, form, but it will all come. Then the beauty and truth comes. Otherwise people with a heavy heart, with a vindictive heart, with vengeance, they can't, as you were rightly saying, it's healing. In therapy you have to remove those pus points and painful knots. Then only you are ready for something which is truer and deeper. Of course if you turn to the mother, she does it all. Just saying how it's happening at the cosmic level. And this seems in complete contradiction with the actual state of the world. But we all know that never is the night so dark as before the dawn. May not this darkness then be the sign of an approaching dawn? And as never was night so complete, so terrifying, maybe never will dawn have been so bright, so pure, so illuminating as the coming one. After the bad dreams of the night, the world will awaken to a new consciousness. She speaks about it right then and there. The civilization which is ending now. We talk about old world and new world, but we use it very loosely. Everything new is not new world. Every fashion is not a new creation. The difference is in the standpoint, the ground on which we stand. The civilization which is ending now in such a dramatic way was based on the power of mind. Mind dealing with matter and life. Mind can solve all the problems of life. We have debates, discussions, seminars. Once I very humorously asked, and perhaps, you know, in one of those discussions, seminars, I generally avoid this, something very special. So, I asked, look here. We are here apparently to solve the problems of the world. Tell me, have you been able to solve the problem in your home? So, you know, the answer is obvious. We don't have to go far. As mother says, when the world union was created, it was created with three people, they fought with each other. So mother says they want to create world unity, but they are fighting with each other. What is the basis of unity? It is the divine self and no other. You can try to understand, respect mutually. All this is old. You can have interfaith dialogues. It is old. In every interfaith dialogue, the person who belongs to one faith is trying to put a very nice show. You know, we are so liberal, this, that, and comes back. Did I convince them? This is the falsehood. It won't work out because humanity is to discover its origin. That's how mother said. How can humanity become one? She says by discovering its origin. Let's get past everything else and go back to the human aspiration. That's how the life divine starts. What is our aspiration? Our aspiration is not to belong to a religious doctrine or to belong to a philosophical system or a school of thought or a government or a party. None of this. They are instruments. What is that human aspiration? What it has been to the world, we have not to discuss here. But a new reign is coming. That of the spirit after the human, the divine. Yet, if we have been fortunate enough to live on earth at such a stupendous, unique time as this one, is it sufficient to stand and watch the unfolding events? Is it enough to say, yes, Mother and Shrivindu spoke about the new creation? Yeah, it'll come in its own time. Meanwhile, let me continue with life as it is. She says, is it enough to watch? All those who feel that their heart extends further than the limits of their own person and family, that their thought embraces more than small personal interests and local conventions, all those, in short, who realize that they belong not to themselves or to their family, or even to their country, but to God who manifests himself in all countries through mankind. These indeed know that they must rise and set to work for the sake of humanity, for the advent of the dawn. And the dawn has come. We know that. 29th February 1956, very special day. We are approaching that dawn of a new creation. And still, we are watching. We are listening to the crow and the cock which cries when the dawn comes. We are revering the cock and the crow, but not opening the doors and windows to the sun that is directly entering through all the resistances of our human life. One more sentence and then we will stop. This is a new kind of humanity which is awakening. For in truth, saviors they will be, as each being of this new type will not live either for himself or for state or society. For the individual ego or the collective ego, but for something much greater, for God in himself and for God in the world. So this is the new creation has already whispered, it has knocked, it has opened doors. There are people who have heard the call. Some have pulled the curtains, looking toward the new sun. Others have joyously stepped out into the fields. Each one is moving at the pace which is predetermined. But unfortunately, many are still asleep. May men awaken from their slumber and greet the new dawn. Okay, thank you so much. And, anything? Yes.
Check? Yes, thank you. So thank you, Alokji, as always, so illuminating. And I'm so glad you've left a little time and we were going to take even more time because I'm sure people don't mind a shorter tea break, because your subject of today is perhaps of all the nine subjects, 9 days, at least for me, I think the big burning question of the time. No?
I'll be happy to take any questions.
So I would like to kick that off.
Yeah.
Can you speak again a little with some emphasis on how the last six creations went through a dissolution? That's the meaning of the word pralay. And how is it that this time we may avoid it?
Okay, so I'll give an image about the pralay, why it happens. So ultimately the original plan, if I may use the word, plan is a wrong word actually, but because we use mental language, the original impulse to creation is ekoham bahushyam. The one divine wants to become many. Many what? Not many human beings or bird and beast, but many divinities. But that cannot be suddenly, because you can't even have an individuality. As long as you are connected with him, it will merge into the divine. So he sends each ray of his glory far into space, down into the inconscient, from where it must awaken. And in matter, the journey will continue, because that's how individualities are created. Matter is the one that makes me so much feel separate from others. Otherwise, emotionally, intellectually, we can still feel a kind of oneness. But materially, it's so difficult. It's actually impossible. So, because matter on one side, it obscures the sense of the divine. And therefore, it is the most best suited medium for creating a sense of individuality distinct from everything else. But in trying to create distinctness, it creates separateness, which is an illusion. We all know that everything is interconnected, even materially. But it was necessary. So that consciousness, that idea of many divines emerging out of one, is embedded in matter. It starts evolving through the different spaces of our human first through the animal, fish and turtle. We know that story. And that story is of this very four yugas. And then as it comes to the human, now it enters the critical phase of evolution. What is the critical phase? Critical phase, like in any nuclear reactor, you have a moment when it enters into a phase when it can't be pulled back. It has entered. It has to go this way or that way. So it enters a critical phase. So when it enters a critical phase, what it means is matter now ready to finally manifest the divine, because the entire manifestation finally has to be on the basis of matter. So you may have an inner realization, people have had, but that's not enough. In mind, life, heart, material existence, can it manifest? So it goes to a point. When it enters a critical phase, it's like do or die. So I take the image of a, people who throw, hammer throw, or what do they do? If you look at people doing the hammer throw, they are moving it like this, no? So supposing you take a time-lapse photography, you will feel at this point it is in front. And here, oh, it has gone behind. But what is it doing? It is gathering momentum. Through these swings and cycles, it is gathering momentum. And a time comes when the escape velocity will be such that it will go past the barrier. So humanity coming down this stair and going back, that's why we see every Satyug is higher than the previous Kaliyug. It doesn't go back from Kaliyug to Dwapar to Treta to Satyug. It goes, Kaliyug is a launching pad to enter a new Satyug. Why? Because everything is, it's an anarchy. And out of that anarchy, the divine can better emerge in the heart of creatures than when there are codifications. So he himself destroys. So each of these cycles with the Pralaya is that there is a preparation which has gone thus far and not further. And then when it comes back, it comes with a greater momentum, like the person who is going to throw is gathering momentum. So far, six cycles, humanity has evolved to a point. It gathered momentum. And then a time comes when, that's what the mother says, that's the leap of faith. And the indications are there, as I said, when it has gathered momentum enough that at least a few or a large, let's hope, large section of humanity escapes from the limits of the human consciousness collectively, and the matter, their body is ready to embody and manifest the new light. The bodies are also changing. Forms are becoming more and more androgynous. Mother spoke about it. Even the, you see, in Air Force we used to have cockpits. Why the women were not allowed at one point of time? So it's because the cockpit was designed to accommodate the men. The men were taller. So, you know, because they have to, it has to fit into the human structure. Now the women have become taller. They are breaking many of the records everywhere, physically. Men and women, even physical level. And thanks to this travel and all kinds of acculturation, a body is getting used to, and that shield which is ozone layer, people are very worried about it, and the gases emission, human body is being taxed to the ultimate capacity for a new emergence. It may sound very strange, but when the plant kingdom was stuffed with too many trees, there was a WHO of plants where they discussed the problem. What was the problem? Carbon dioxide was in extreme shortage. You know, plants breathe carbon dioxide. They were dying of too much oxygen. So they didn't know what to do. Rules, regulations, everything. Fortunately, they asked some plants, old like peepal tree, they're closer to Krishna, as he says, and the banyan tree, that's how our mythologies say, Ashwath tree. They went to Ashwath tree, said, you tell us what is God's intention, we are going to be destroyed. And Ashwathri goes to Krishna and comes back. He says, oh, don't worry, don't worry. What is it? You focus on evolving something out of the plant. What is it? What kind of a solution? Are you sure you are not taking some bhang or something and you are hallucinating? No. You told me as the Ashwathri, I have gone to Krishna and got this message. Most trees didn't believe. They kept fighting, passing laws, rules, like, oh, this much you will breathe. You can't. But some trees took it seriously. They evolved into animal life. Animal life breathes oxygen and releases carbon dioxide. A new balance was created upon earth. Everything that is happening and will happen will hasten the new creation, including when solar outbursts took place, solar flares, I'm forgetting, was it the year 1960s? Mother spoke about it. She said, it is good. Even when people were going mad, she said, they are breaking all these old patterns. So, everything that is happening and will happen is going to hasten the new creation. We have to have the faith and the aspiration and go towards it. Of course, some people keep worrying and complaining and trying the old method. That's their business. Yeah.
In that context, COVID was such an unusual experience. Yeah. So could you speak to that?
Yes, as I was involved as a doctor, and one of my, this whole thing in, started during COVID, many of these talks coming regularly because I was jobless suddenly. In the sense that ashram didn't have so many, we needed special COVID wards. Later on we had a COVID care facility, make believe. But otherwise, very few were coming out too, even if they had a diarrhea or something. Yeah. Most of these places were like that. Make believe. Because a lot of people made a lot of money in COVID. You know how? Doctors made nursing homes, COVID dedicated. So they got grant, instant grant. But that's a different story. But COVID was a challenge to humanity. And I can share a few things. Sri Aurobindo, when during one of the influenza epidemics, he said that, well, this virus is a combination of, there is a material particle which has been used by a vital adverse force, and it enters into us through suggestion, takes hold of us through fear. So treatment is rest, quietude, open to the mother. So I was saying this, and they labeled me as, they grounded me for, I think 3-4 times because I refused to take vaccine. Because Sri Aurobindo had said, vaccine is a dark and dangerous principle. Now we are discovering all that about, the co-vaccine, what was that, Pfizer's, whatever. Yeah, we are discovering that. And I have myself noted young deaths in people with heart attacks and all. Many things have come into existence. So we didn't take the course we should have taken. So vaccines came, and it was fear, all over fear. So every time I would speak, they said, no, if you don't have vaccine, you don't come. And it was very sad. So finally, the divine arranged that I get a vaccine certificate. So I said, I didn't try, honestly. That's a different story how it came. I simply said, look here, what do you need, vaccination or certificate? Okay, you get the certificate. So with that certificate, I traveled all over the world. So, you see, these are times when your faith is challenged. I'm not saying faith is like a superstition and a blind belief. Take reasonable precautions. But Mother has given all the guidelines for all of this. By faith you mean, what is the source of faith? The divine is within my body. This is the basic teaching of a spiritual life. And if the creator of the world is within me, what should I be afraid of? Death? We can dare death. Even if we go, where will we go? To her lap. She will bring us back with a new body, a better body. So I was frankly that time a bit distraught that even in India we are afraid of death. Because one of the things that I learned as an Indian is that death doesn't exist. Because there is rebirth. So all this went through. Now slowly things are coming out. Though they tried to get a third vaccine dose and all this. But slowly, because it's the age of truth, you can't cover falsehood for a long time. Now we know it was so much about money. Who benefited? Look at the list. Which company suddenly went from nowhere to top 3? The data is there. But there were people who suddenly instinctively felt, there was no data, that no, for some reason they said we refuse to be vaccinated. Today, if you have to go for blood donation, you are asked whether you were vaccinated or not vaccinated. If you are vaccinated, you may not be accepted for blood donation, strangely. Mm. This is the latest. So now slowly things are coming out. So all these challenges will come. many more will come. And each of these challenges will segregate humanity. Those who are ready to take a leap of faith, we see that in Steven Spielberg's movie, Indiana Jones series. Last is the leap of faith. That's how Bible says. Last act is the leap of faith. And those who are with fear and science and its paradigms. So this is what is happening today. That's why new alternate ways have sprung up. Thanks again to COVID. People turn towards homeopathy, Ayurveda, many of them. Some towards yoga. It came up in a big way. Recently, India's Chief Justice, he was saying that when I had COVID, the Honorable Prime Minister called me up and said, you know, I know a very good Ayurveda doctor and why don't you consult him? So he didn't believe in all this and he was just narrating few days back. And he said, I took his advice and I recovered so well. And he says, from then he has become a fan of Ayurveda. And now he does yoga, I mean yoga asanas, but okay, regularly. The fallout of COVID on the one side is many who lost their lives, and of course, it's never a good thing to happen. But equally, there were those who survived by the power of faith and trusted their own immune system and the God within us.
So based on that, Alokji, a very deeper question which not everyone hears about, those in integral yoga know. The four Asuric forces which triggered the evolution. So in the seventh creation, what will happen with these anti-divine forces, which apparently two have been taken care of, two are still there?
Yes.
Could you speak to that?
All have been taken care of. So what are these four undivine forces or anti-divine forces, whichever way you put it? In the last analysis, nothing remains as anti-divine. But yes, it can be said. So who are these four asuras? So the story goes that as creation advanced further and further, leaping from the heart of God. Let me put it a little better how I like, leaping from the heart of love. So at it went further and further, each started going his own way. Like four children of the same mother, each going in his own direction. Some may forget the parents, some don't care, they have gone far and wide, whatever it is. So it went further and further till a time came when a veil was put on this, and the veil was necessary. Because without the veil, they're always, Papa, I have a problem, Mama, I have a problem. Parents are most happy when children don't, I mean, they should be most happy when grown-up children don't call them. Then all is well. All that you need is just write a smiley or something. You don't want to know anything more. If they keep calling, Mama, I have a problem, then parents wonder. They had to forget. This also was an act of the divine. But the moment you forget the source will never forget you. How much ever children may forget, mothers never forget. Source never forgets you. But children can forget. So, and that's part of the plan. That's how they grow up into adults. So too creation by forgetfulness plunged into darkness. We can equally say the divine consciousness deliberately entered a state of self-oblivion. But I am putting it a little more in a simple way. And when creation, which came in such a grandeur and beauty and simplicity and spontaneity, godlike, it entered into self-oblivion, then what happened? All the four great powers that went out. What are the four great powers? Indian perspective, Satchidanand, Sat, Chit, Tapas, Anand. Sat is existence, or you may call truth, because it's the true substance. Chit is consciousness, and tapas is force, and ananda is bliss. So what it became? It became its opposite. So Sat became untruth, unrhythm, falsehood, we may use the word. I like the word unrith, because that's there in the Upanishad. And what happened to consciousness? Unconsciousness. Lot of suffering today is because of unconsciousness. And then, what happened to tapas? Weakness. This idea, I am weak, I am useless, helpless, is the action. See, these asuras act like that. And ananda became suffering. So when we love suffering, we are siding with this asura. When we say that by sleeping on bed of nails, I am going to arrive at God, we are actually going into his lap. All suffering is a contravention of divine law. But pleasure is a perversion of the divine truth, which makes it worse. But nevertheless, pain and pleasure and indifference are disguises. All that, now sat, truth, all that connects with the divine, the origin. If we live our life simply with this idea that we are all have a common origin, life would be so different. Matter also has that origin. Divine is in all. Therefore, it must be treated with respect. But what does this falsehood does? It puts a veil. World is different, God is different, this is different, that is different. Forever divided. So it creates division. What does force becomes? Weakness. Or consciousness becomes unconsciousness. Force becomes weakness. All this idea which Arjuna had at the beginning of war. What can I do? How will I do? What this, that? And he says, what has come over you? Delusion, moha. Moha makes us feel weak. And then finally, ananda has become suffering. But then, after all, originally God's children, they started the creation. What will they create? The dark worlds, patal lok. So the divine mother herself plunged into it. And who went along with her? A portion of her heart. Because the God said we will go, and a second line came in, that is the gods. And this God said that we will help pulling creation out. But we need something from the divine mother which can sustain us. We don't think we are capable of doing it alone. Out of her heart poured a drop of that love. That love will develop into the psychic being. A sense of psychic being is that love. And that's why the moment your psychic being awakens, you recognize the divine mother as the divine mother. Nobody has to tell you, nobody has to convince you. It knows, it recognizes. So it plunged into creation. All the gods came. The god Agni and Soma. They had a great role to play. Why Agni? Agni is the urge for progress. Agni, aage. Go ahead. Ag. So it keeps pushing us. Thirst for progress. That started pulling creation out. And Soma, ananda. The maximum joy one can ever get in life is by progress. That's why after some time when things become mechanical, we feel stifled. So this progress. So instead of seeking happiness, if we see progress, happiness will be given to us as by default. It designed in creation. So Agni and Soma lead the journey, and then slowly, slowly they recover back. So what happened to these asuras? They are also coming. Now who all are coming? Divine Mother who had plunged into creation. The four asuras sticking on like olden days in the trains. People sticking on in India. Sticking on to the outside. Sitting on top. Sticking on. No ticket, nothing. But they are rakas. But they all have to come. Indian socialism is like that. Socialism, if you look at it, is in the best sense, spontaneous socialism. Okay, and we used to say, ticket, come in, general compartment. That's how we have grown up. Doesn't matter, you have a ticket, you don't have a ticket, rule, not rule, but come. Sit, and they will take your own seat, sit a little bit, you know, find a place. So these asuras are tag-alongs. And along with that is psychic being. So now we have these three fellows together, or three elements. One is the psychic being. The other is the asuras. Why? Because they want to change. And the most important is the divine mother. And then the gods who are all around. Sometimes these gods fight with the demons. Sometimes they work together to bring out the nectar. Before the nectar comes poison. That is a wonderful story. And I love stories. I am resisting my temptation to recount all these stories. But anyways, as creation begins to come out, it has reached a point where asuras have reached a final stage. So what is that final stage? Either they accept dissolution or conversion. It is there even the story of Jayavijaya, who are discarded from the home of Vishnu because they didn't understand. They asked the identity card from a sage. Sage says, you are working here, you can't recognize, you have not even awakened that much intuition that you can differentiate a sage. So he tells them, go into the worlds of fear and suspicion. So they go to Vishnu. Now what will he do? He says, you people have been doing this. You once asked identity card of Lakshmiji also. So I have no choice. You go through it, but I will come and rescue you. You can come either in 3 lives or 7 lives. See the number 7. So 3 lives. He said, okay. 3 lives sounds better. He said, but hold on. 3 lives. Yeah. 3 lives you will be I will come to wrestle with you. I'll destroy you completely. So they said, doesn't matter. I will come back. 7 lives, the path of fulfillment. Divine fulfillment. I think we all chose for 7 lives. So what happens to these asuras? As you said, finally, the mother had all of them around her since her childhood. She says they were tag along with her because they know where they can get relief, redeemed rather. And that is a story of a life, many aspects. Who were these asuras? We will not go into that. We will not go into their human representatives. That's a long subject. But essentially, asuras are hostile to the divine plan. What characterizes the asura most is it would not want the divine plan to work out at any level. It will do everything to block it and stop it. That is, whether in an individual, a group, collectivity, wherever. Asuras are against the divine plan because they know if the divine plan succeeds. So they want to hold creation. So the 2 asuras who finally agreed for conversion were the asuras of unconsciousness and suffering. So these 2 agreed. And 2 which didn't agree were death and falsehood. But this is how it is spoken. But if you read through the agenda right till the end, in one of her visions, she shoots the asura of death. Death dies. So what is the significance? Fear of death will go. Slowly we will begin to discover ways and means for prolonging life and eventually getting rid of death. So death is done with. For some time it will be an instrument as long as necessary, and that's there in Savitri also. What about falsehood? It says, okay, I know, I have no choice. All my fellows, friends have gone. But I know I will surrender. So basically, in principle, it is agreed. But before I dissolve, I am going to create as much chaos as I can. Mother just laughs. Okay, I am going to have the last call. She gives a hint in 1972, I think 25th December message, where she says, before dying, falsehood rises to its full swing, indicating that the time has come. It is going to die. Another message, men, countries, continent, the choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. So people ask, mother, why did you just smile? Should have just thrown it away. He said, yes, but all of you are harboring it. Falsehood in your heart. If I give it a tight slap, all of you will collapse. Because you are being fed by all the halwa, gulab jamun and pastry and cake from these asuras. And because you are harboring them, I am helpless. If I destroy it, most of you will collapse. Your energy comes from the asura. So that's why she says, okay, you want to do that way, do it. You are going to go away. So all the 4, if you really look through her writings, it's very clear that work is done. But falsehood has said that it will try its best. But every time it tries, its game will be exposed by truth. For instance, in the case of corona and the vaccines. In the case of hypocrisy and insincerity in international dealings, she spoke about it. In the case of spreading fear. So over a period of time, this fellow is getting exposed. Mother said it's an age of truth. And do not try to do anything which you want to keep hidden. Because it will become public. Nobody is safe. See how it started with the impeachment of the American president. I am not going behind the conspiracies and other things. Who could have imagined? And everywhere. You do something, there is some hidden camera of Chitragupta somewhere watching. God knows who has got implanted. It is an age of truth, and only they will get across who practice this truth. Truth is not about simply outer truth, my land, my... No, that is in fact unrith. truth. Follow that truth in your heart, the true way of life. Truth in speech, truth in thought. Don't speak if you don't have to speak. Truth in thoughts, truth in feelings, truth in actions. Don't try to put up nice figure, sir, you are so wonderful, but deep inside, when will this fellow? That won't work out. It's the age of truth. So all of them are, one way or the other, taken care of. Yeah. Okay.